Hello, Heather. So exciting.
Good to see you. How are you?
Really great. It's just, oh, I'm just always so glad to be alive again for another day, So much fun.
You were hopscotching through things. I love that visual yesterday, Lynn. You're like, I'm hopscotching. I was like, hopscotching, how great.
Well, what about you now? You've just come off Heather Tyson. You've just come off a high from your recent performance, which we're going to talk about today.
Yes.
This is your first podcast ever. Is that true?
First podcast ever.
How can that be?
I haven't really thought about it or considered it. So thank you for inviting me because I feel like, well, this is a whole new thing that I need to turn toward and welcome.
Well, welcome to Living on Purpose.
Thank you. I was listening to Joshua and Adam and you and just smiling and thinking it's so fun to both have these conversations and to listen to them, to hear. We're all so different in how we approach things, and yet listening in for the connecting things and then the things that make you go, huh, I didn't think about it that way. That's good to ponder. So,
Oh, yeah, it's true. I mean, there's so much to learn from each other, and there's no end to it. It's just such an interesting thing to be alive. Well, since you mentioned Joshua and Adam and notes on your notes, I definitely wanted to talk about them and you with them, and also Anne Randolph, because these are ways that I have met you. Is it true the first time we met was really with that workshop with Joshua and Adam?
yes, I think we were in unmute together before that because I was in unmute first. So I knew you since you help Anne, and obviously you're a key part of kind of running the daily routine. So I knew of Lynn Thompson. But yes, I think we were officially, obviously with Notes on Your Notes in that class, much smaller group, much more time together, reading work and listening to the stories. So yeah, I think that is where. If you want to say there was a more of an official introduction, not just one of 90 faces on a screen.
Exactly. Yeah. Anne Randolph's Your Story Matters, Unmute Yourself has been going for almost 4 years since 2020. And I've been attending most of them for 3 years. And when did you start with Anne?
It's funny, I don't recall the first unmute session I did, but I was at her last in-person retreat before the world shut down. So I did a 2-week retreat with her in February of 2020. Came home right at the end of that month, and then within a couple of weeks, everything went sideways, or it was already in the process at that time, although we didn't know that. So at some point in there, she launched Happy Cock Church. So that was the precursor to Unmute, I believe. So I was signing into, if not both of them, she started and she was doing a Saturday and a Sunday. So I was joining Happy Cock Church. And I don't know exactly when she launched Unmute. I don't think I was in the very first one, but I was somewhere in the early stages. I did one of the Unmute months and then stepped away from it because of work. I think I did one session, loved it, and then tried to do the self-guided version where you still, you sign up and you get the recording sent. And it just, I did it one night. And I was like, yep, nope, doesn't work for me. Even though we're not all in the same room, I still need to show up with people. And it didn't dawn on me, of course, that when she sends out the recording, she doesn't send out the whole hour. So it was like just the open and the, invocation and meditation and then the prompt and then skip to the end. And I was like, oh no, I want to see the people. I want to be with me. She can't send that out every day. It just like never occurred to me. So then I think it was probably sporadically, maybe I did some of the months until about this time last year. I
Okay.
was with her in New Zealand, the retreat she did in New Zealand late January of last year of 23. So when I came back from that, that is when I took a very, how shall I say, intentional break from my day-to-day job and committed to finally doing my show. And so Unmute, I think we started the next Unmute after her retreat was like a couple of days after I came back from New Zealand because I stayed there a little after she did. Many of us did. We traveled for longer and just, you're going all that way. So I think, yes, I came back on like a Friday and then we jumped into Unmute on Monday. So it was perfect as far as keeping the momentum and the intention and the focus going forward because I had made that choice to take some time off and really commit to, I think even that retreat, Anne said to me, I don't know, day one, day two of that retreat, because at that point I had been maybe four retreats with her starting in 2015. I think from 2015 to 2021, one, it must have been. I think there were four different retreats. So New Zealand would have been my fifth. And we were early, early on. One of the first days, she looks at me and she goes, "No more retreats for you. It's time to do the show." It's just like, "Nope, Heather." And I was like, I know, you're right, you're right. So yes, I think the last year I was able to really commit, you know, and unmute was a key part of keeping me focused and moving forward. Even though at times, because we generate new things potentially every day, I was not using unmute only as an incubator for my show. Like I was coming to the prompts every day open. And sometimes it would align with what I was working on for my show, and sometimes it wasn't. So there were key moments of unmute sessions where I'd be like, "You have to stop writing. Like you cannot, you're just generating too much material and you got to focus and get your show done." But I also think because I had free time around unmute, it was a great way to start the day because then it would keep me in that space. And so when I shifted into either rehearsing or working on the show, I was already primed. I would spend hours on Circle reading other people's work and commenting. And there would be days where that would be my whole morning. And then I'd shift gears in the afternoon and start to work on the show or rehearse. And I thought, yeah, if I could do this every day, if this was actually what my day was for the rest of my life, well, I want this. Reading and commenting and creating. It was such a magical time. And to feel the support, even though it's all virtual, you know, to just know you're in the same circle of people focusing in and writing their stories in their own ways. So super valuable, as you well know.
Yeah, that's a great description of it all. And just to fill in the structure of that, it's 9 o'clock for an hour, like 9 o'clock Pacific time. So for, yeah, some people it's starting their day. For me, it's at noon in the Eastern, and it goes for 4 weeks at a time, and then usually 4 or 5 weeks off. Yeah, and then this online forum private to the group that we call Circle, where people post and get two positive comments each and give at least two positive comments. So it's such a great community, and it's very touching to see how many people are really opened up through that. So great testament from both of us. Okay, so then when I met you in that workshop with Joshua and Adam, with a handful of us developing a piece of writing over a course of weeks, and that was a whole different thing, but I met them through Anne's workshop on mute. Was that your first one last year? Oh, interesting. You came to it with this piece, because the first piece I saw you do in there that you were working on was the one from the point of view of your mother.
Mm-hmm.
You just blew me away. Like I had no idea who you were really, or what, where you were going with this, or, you know, I was putting it together, listening to your first run of it with us anyway. I mean, obviously it wasn't your first run of it. And then the boxes piece. I mean, let's just go with Joshua and Adam and tell us more about that and how you connected with them and what that was like for you. And then, you know, I definitely want to be talking about your show and your performances.
Thank you. It's fun to get to talk about this because it helps me to look back and have that perspective of time, and especially to fast forward to now where I'm like, oh my God, what's next? To look back and go, okay, look how I was supported. There was a lot of things that aligned very magically. And I think a key of that for me, key piece, was making the intentional choice to clear the calendar for this, you know, because I had not ever been able to do that. And I had that opportunity. So it happened to be, I think, and maybe it was you, Lynn. Maybe it was you who announced an unmute. I don't know if they were calling it a salon, but it was an evening of sharing their writers. And so somehow I got wind of that. And this would have been last, around this time, again, last year is when all this stuff was happening. I had known of Joshua and Adam through Anne and through a lot of people. I actually had met Joshua once before. He didn't remember this. We had dinner because of a mutual friend, like in the fall of 2020. And Anne had recommended, you know, when I left her retreat in 2020, she was like, "What's next? You're doing the show." And I said, "I think I need community. I need a director." So she gave me a list of names, and Joshua's name was on the list, of course. And so my friend, you know, was like, "Well, let's have dinner," and was telling him about my show. And I have like two funny things about Joshua, and very like not knowing him in a very Joshua way now that I understand. He said, "Well, what's the show about?" or something. And I was wishy-washy. And I think at that time it was because I was still in process of it, you know. And then there were many years where I was like, why aren't you doing this? Get it done. What's wrong with you? But I was like, now I look back and go, oh, it wasn't ready. It wasn't ready. Even if you thought, okay, there's been enough time that you've been writing and thinking about this, it still wasn't, I wasn't ready as this person. And I remember when he asked me that question, I didn't have a great answer. He's like, well, you don't know what it's about yet. And not knowing him, I was a little bit, I don't know if I've ever told him this story. I was a little bit like, oh, okay, well, I don't think I can work with this guy. And that speaks to my lack of clarity, but he was right on. You know, he was right on about that. So fast forward to coming back from New Zealand, and again in that mode of Anne saying, "What's next?" Like it's the show, and I thought I do need to find a director. And again, I had a list of people. So learning about that salon, I thought, well, this will be great because I'll get to see him in action, see Adam in action, hear the stories. So I just showed up with just curiosity. Listen to the stories. I love any kind of storytelling event. This medium, you know, for me, storytelling is everything because it connects us. So I love it. And I was sitting there like this, smiling like I do. And at the end of the session, you know, Joshua opens up to talk to people or whatever. And he must have announced, I think they were starting their class that week. So that was like a Sunday night. And they were like, we have one spot left in this class that starts Thursday. So that was in the back of my head. And I was like, okay, you should maybe jump in and work with them just as, again, exploration, not necessarily even tied to my show, but also just thinking about the future and support and community. So at the end of the salon, again, anybody want to say anything? And I don't raise my hand. I enjoyed the evening and I was just happy to be there. And again, in a very Joshua way, he goes, well, what about you, Heather Tyson? You look like you might have something to say. I was kind of like, well, I didn't raise my hand, but I guess I'm saying something now. And so I commented about how much I appreciate bearing witness to people's stories because it just reminds us of our humanity. You know, even if I know nothing about you and our backgrounds couldn't be more different, hearing your story, I'm going to connect somewhere because of the shared humanity. So I think I said something like that. And then I said, and by the way, I hear you have one spot left. Now that you've shared that, I will be emailing you right after the salon. So yeah, I jumped in with only a couple days ahead of, you know, notice. I think I talked to him first and maybe I did tell him this whole story then. So anyway, that's how I ended up in the class. And again, just as a way to continue to work out and also sneaky way to sort of see them in action again, specifically with Joshua, because Anne had just talked about how much he'd supported her in her solo shows. And then with that first piece that I read, the mom piece, when I talked to him, he said, either bring something that you feel really solid about, or bring something that really scares you. I can't remember if those are the exact things he said, but I had worked on that piece prior to that. And when I had first worked on it, probably in Anne's workshops, I re was really afraid of sharing that because, you know, it's my family. And I just, in the early stages of writing monologues from my mother's perspective, I got some interesting feedback that usually had to do with that person offering the feedback, their experience with their mother or their family, you know, the personal, not the creative, not the constructive criticism that Anne is so great about creating, but like an emotional response. And I had had to be like, no, that's your story, not my story. And I had to really work with exposing things that felt so private. And especially with my family, I'm close to them. I adore them. We have different belief systems now. And to put that out in the public eye, it's scary. It's tricky, you know? So by the time I shared it with Joshua and Adam, I did feel like, oh, I've done a lot of work around this and feel, I felt, I wouldn't say confident is the right word, but I felt like, okay, this is a strong, you know, it's a strong piece because it's a certain perspective. It's not my perspective and it has its own story. It's its own character. But then I even think afterwards, I switched gears right away, I think to the next week or whenever we shared in that group, because he kind of pushed me to do something that was a little bit more messy, a little bit more of like, let it blow up. And some of the things I wrote during Notes on Your Nose during that session were brand new. Some of them did end up in the show. You know, there was a whole raging piece, you know, about men who cheat. And what do you guys all think about men who cheat? Like, you must think it's okay. You all cheat too. You know, that whole side of it was coming out in the piece I was working on in their class. And talk about messy. And I talk about like blowing the top off a little bit. It was like, oh yeah, that's part of the story too, is that my story is about my particular experience with betrayal, but I have a rage kind of against the bigger picture of what's acceptable, you know, as far as betrayals and lies. And, you know, I can get emotional about those things in the world. So it became a bigger, you know, protest against all of it, not just this one experience that I had, which obviously was a big experience and shaped a lot of things for me. But it was definitely a, ooh, is it risky to look at a room full of people and be like, you've all cheated. What's wrong with everybody?
Well, it's very interesting. You sent me the recording. Thank you so much of your most recent performance. How many performances have you done now?
It's been at three different festivals. So total shows, total actual performances, eight. Yeah, I did the Hollywood Fringe Festival in June of 2023. That's the first time I did the show. And I did six performances during that festival, which was wonderful to get to do six. And then I did one show in November, and then the one show recently in February.
Okay, so the recording you sent me before.
Yeah, so the one that you watched live, right? You live streamed it. That would have been in November. The one I sent you, this was the most recent one that just happened in February.
Yeah, so because we'd been hearing about those six, but there wasn't a recording to share. So it was really great to see this most recent one and just see the maturation of you with it all. You're so familiar with it now. You've got this whole shtick, and it's like, it's just over an hour, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the recording, because I was curious, I didn't time this most recent version. I had given myself 75 minutes because of course you feel like tell people a running time. And I had to be limited to an hour during the Fringe, Hollywood Fringe. It's very much about the timing of everything because there's so many things going on and one show after another in these theaters. So you pick a 60 minute slot, you cannot be over 60 minutes. So, and I knew the next level slot would be a 90 minute. I'm like, that's too long. Sweet spot for me is right around that hour, maybe a little longer. So the gift of being able to do the show at two different festivals that didn't have those same kind of time limits was that I did give myself some room to play. So both the one I did in November and this one, I thought it's going to be more like an hour, 10, hour 15 tops. But it was intentional because I knew there were some things I wanted to be able to be more fluid with or take more time with. So yeah, I looked at the recording. I'm like, oh, hour 10. Good. I was under the hour 15. That's, I'm going to stay there. I don't want it to be longer than that.
Yeah, hour 10. That's right. Well, so how did you, I'm so curious about the evolution of it. And, you know, we've talked about a couple of the pieces, but I mean, you've got the whole boxes piece. I think you shared that on a masterclass during the unmute session, right? Yeah. And that was really cool to see because then I could see the pieces coming together. But how did the whole context of the auto training, where'd that show up from?
Right. That came out of a retreat in an improv with Anne back in 2020 in that 2-week retreat. That was a magical time for me because, again, being intentional with 2 weeks of your life to only be creative and to focus on that day in and day out, there were so many moments in that 2-week period that were like, aha, oh my God, this changes everything. You know, I showed up at that retreat and, you know, as we start, it typically Anne will ask, what's your intention for the retreat? And I did say, I want the structure of my show. And again, in Anne fashion, like very lovingly, like, great to have that intention. Please don't put that pressure on yourself if it doesn't happen in the next 2 weeks. Like, you're discovering, it's evolving, like let it be fluid, you know? And it was the final monologue. So with that structure of that retreat, it was two separate weeks put together. Most of the group was stayed the whole time, but it was like her more structured retreat for the first week. And then it was more of like a writer's retreat for the second week where we were all kind of doing our own thing. We would still maybe gather every day. She would still do a meditation, but it was much more like she was calling it like a working writer's retreat. So we still had a show at the end of that 2 weeks. So we had a show at the end of the first week, a show at the end of the second week. So that day we were going to do the show, you know, she invites her participants in the workshop to either read something or improv. And I've always chosen to improv because it's a little scarier. And I'm a performer first, I think. I'm a writer, performer, but I would say where I live the most fully is the performance. So I've always improvised. And that day she said, "Do you need me to give you a prompt?" Because she would still give the improvisers prompts. And I said, "Ah," and she's like, "Well, you think you have it?" I was like, let me just sit with this today. And then if I need something, I'll let you know later." And so the day goes by or whatever. And I'm thinking, I don't know. And literally, I'm in the shower about an hour before the show. We're supposed to meet for the show. And suddenly, my brain, because this is the work I do, I work in automotive training and facilitation. So, like, that's not made up, you know? And this whole structure of automotive safety technology, the warning signals, paying attention to them. Like, I got a download in the shower that I was like, oh, what if I improvised around this whole idea of these systems, the braking system telling you to brake? Okay, you missed the warning signals. Why didn't you slow down? Like, and so that night, that was how I don't even remember how I got into the
Wow.
improv that night, but it was in my head that I was in my presenter mode of like, hi, everybody, you're welcome to the auto show, because that's what I used to do, much more presentational auto show, not training. So I was in that mode of, I'm going to tell you all about the safety technology. And the improv came out of that, which was magical for me because it was very much in the moment discovering the, oh, wait, don't cross the line. That's what it's telling you. But he's crossing the line. Why am I not understanding that? I didn't see that there was a, was there a warning signal? Did I miss it? You know, like it was very much just coming out of that improv. And then interestingly enough, the very last line of my show came out of that improv. So I knew at the end of that retreat in 2020, I came out of that going, well, there's the structure. How do you play in that world of you are living your life, you are doing your job, you're trying to keep everything together. And meanwhile, underneath the surface, you are a mess. Because I had experienced that for so many years where I was, again, working these auto shows. You're working with consumers, you're with massive amounts of people every day. And I was putting on that smiley face and I was standing in my suit and heels and looking pretty and being very like welcoming. And inside, I kept thinking, like, why hasn't the world stopped? Like, my world fell apart. How come nobody else seems to notice that? Like, how do you not see that? And but meanwhile, on the outside is this whole face. It's going, hi, welcome. I want to tell you about cars. And inside, I'm going, I can't. I gotta stop. Like, somebody please see me, see that this is happening, you know? And I think oftentimes Anne would coach in that world of the presentational for me specifically, you know, working in that big presentational style, but then having the truth kind of seep out, bubble out, the cracks start to show, you know? So again, I left that retreat and I was like, well, there it is. There is the structure. There is something that is so me. You know, it's like I get emotional talking about it. I'm like, yeah, how do you tell your story authentically? When you look at the structure of the show, I have to go, well, God, who else would? There are very few people that would choose this structure because it's so the world that I have lived in. And it's funny because I've had people ask after they've seen the show, like, is that real? Yeah, very much. Very much that is the world I live in, 9 to 5 or whatever. It's never the 9 to 5 hours. I'm working 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. these days. But it is the training components of the show. Some of that is exaggerated, but so much of that, those are words that have come out of my mouth in classrooms. Like, that's the truth.
Well, I mean, it's a beautiful idea. That's so cool you got that download, because I think that's part of what makes it just so natural is because you're not creating that out of nothing. Like you say, that's something you're very familiar with. Yeah, I mean, I love the way that it just lends itself. And you use lighting a bit where you're sort of going in and like the interior world and then the exterior, you know, like, oh, we're back from lunch, you know, and really well done, I think. It was a brilliant idea to do that as the structure.
Thank you. And that has come out of life experience. Like, I would never have thought about that without that improvisation. And, you know, really, it's like the two things. Number one, I think we can all relate to having to put on a good face when something really awful is happening. Like, we all have to live our lives, even when we're things are falling apart, we still have to show up and handle things. So I think we can all relate to that in and out of like the inner and the outer, the inner monologue with the outer dialogue. And then, of course, with the automotive, like what a gift for me were all these years of working in this industry that I sort of, never really chose to be in, but ended up there. The metaphor of the safety technology. And even if you can go so deep into the metaphor of cars, crashes, running out of gas, pedal to the metal. I mean, there's so many things that lend then to this idea of things going wrong in life, us missing warning signals, us having breakdowns, the car having a breakdown, you're having a breakdown. So it's like it was sort of this gift that I would have never landed on otherwise if I hadn't, been working in that world for so long.
Yeah. So I don't think we're giving a lot away here because the whole experience of your show from not being there live, but seeing the recording, I mean, it's unto itself, And I really appreciated your just the subtlety of your movements too. Like, I mean, your full body, just there you are on stage and you take your little name tag on and off a bit. And, there's a little bit of transition, but mostly you're playing a couple different characters off each other. And that's what I wanted to say is just the subtlety of your movements. Like you're very solid, and yet you've got all these great expressions on your face and just little twitches in your body. And like it's just a lot of really natural movements, really expressive. And you've got the cell phone in there, which you use as a prop a lot. And your water, which is, if you're in training, you're going to be having a little sip of water now and then. So you get that incorporated into it, which is great. One thing I was wondering watching it, the most recent one, is I don't remember as much audience response in the first one I watched. Like there was a lot of laughter this time. And I wondered, like, especially at moments where it is not really funny and reactions, to some of the things you're saying. So I was kind of curious, like, how was that for you? Did I mean, that gives you information, but how did you feel in the moment? Because when somebody laughs, you kind of want to play to it, but you also want to stay in character. So, how did you do that?
A great question. And what's fascinating is the gift of being able to do the show more than once is that was different every single performance. Every single performance. There were very noisy audiences. There were very quiet audiences. There were audiences that were talking back. Like people being like, oh no, certain things. So I had the gift of doing the six shows the first time around was the experience of how different it can be. Because sometimes, you get used to, oh, they laugh here. Oh, they respond audibly here. And because it was different every time, I got very used to being like, I don't know what I'm going to get. And because of the painful aspects, and I think because of the jumps back and forth from the inner to the external, like the inner monologue and back to the classroom, I think because of that disconnect, that causes people to laugh, which is actually kind of my experience of watching it, but even being in it, obviously, is that like, oh, it breaks the tension. And in some ways, that's good. Now, as the performer, again, to try to be back and forth in those two places, it is a little more challenging. And specifically to this last one, to talk about the laughter, I do think too, I will say, I think the quality of what you saw, the live stream versus this, much better microphones. So you probably didn't hear as much of the audience response, but I would say this was a pretty, well, I don't know. I think too, it's that the people who are sitting in the front row near the microphones are people who know me. And so their laughter, I think sometimes did come as a little bit of a surprise to me because there were times that I thought, oh no, people don't normally laugh at that particular line. But I do think sometimes it comes out of discomfort. And I also would prefer as a performer to hear the audience versus hear nothing because then you don't know if it's land. I mean, sometimes you can tell if people are really with you. Each time it's been an interesting experience because obviously I hear all of that, I feel all of that. And yes, you can't play into those things. I think there was a time before I ever did the very first round where I was considering doing this as more of a stand-up piece. I'm not a stand-up comedian, but I thought, oh, it's fun to engage with the audience. And I like to be able to respond. I can remember somebody saying something like, in something that I was questioning in an improvised monologue about, again, his honesty. the truthfulness of the situation, somebody being like, how could you believe that? And it's like, well, I know now. And like in those improvs, you could talk to the audience, but it became very clear as I was building this that I was like, oh no, if you want to keep the audience with you on the journey, you can't comment on what they're saying because it's going to break it. It would break. This is not stand up. This is, you're watching, hopefully, what feels like a lived experience. You're going through it with me. So you can't comment on it. Because in my writing, I would comment on it. I'm like, no, you have to take the commenting of it out because that's Heather who understands now what was really going on. Heather in the moment was trying to figure that out and wanted to believe that everything was on the up and up and was trying to convince herself that it was. So, yes, sometimes it would be fun to be able to tap into what the audience is saying specifically and respond back to them. But I do think for this particular structure of this performance, like it would not serve the piece. It would take the audience out of it, and it would like you'd lose some of the tension and then get engagement. But it is interesting because it does potentially, as the performer, I don't want to say it throws me, but it's like it's more information that's coming in. And because it's different, it's part of the trajectory of the rest of the performance. So it can kind of shift things a little bit, even if I try to resist being too impacted by what's happening with the audience. But it definitely, it can sneak in there because it's
Well,
live.
I know it's live. And like if you're at a recording, like I mean, I can be laughing. You don't know. I'm watching a recording of you doing it, right? But it's like there's a couple of things there. Like one is in the piece, like we were saying, you're in a training session, you're talking to a group. Well, there's an audience in front of you. So there was a moment there where it felt like they were your group that you were training. And so there was that really fuzzy sort of blurriness of the line, right? Where it's like, okay, so you're interacting with this group that's not there, but they're there and they feel like that you're interacting with them. And so, yeah, it was interesting. And I thought, whoa, yeah, that is a line that you have to, that it's up to you to maintain that. And also, as far as the lived experience, like this is part of what we do a lot. We get the mindset of in Anne Randolph's Unmute is to talk about the character and not assume that this is all true, right? So, you've got the present person who's learned a lot from what you're talking about. You got the person, you've got the performer going through portraying all this stuff that you went through over and over. Like, how many people want to go over and over this stuff? But, well, which is a question I have. What compels you to do this material? And how on earth do you, I mean, obviously it's challenging, it's scary, it's exciting. I mean, how do you maintain that and continue living and growing by repeating such intense material? And do you have it all memorized? Like, what the heck?
Oh, great questions. Yeah. And even that, what compels me to do this? I asked myself this question over and over again. And there was definitely, I think there was a secret hope that once I did the show once, that I'd be like, okay, now I'm done. It's out of my system. And that is not the case. It's like, oh, because at the end of the day, I am a performer. I walked away from performing for over 10 years. So this has just brought me back to like the truth of who I am. And that is key. And I think what compels me is it is tricky because I do ask myself, why are you putting yourself through this? But I think making sense of what happened and the changes in my life because of what happened has been why I've written about it, has been why I've wanted to perform it. I think now, again, when I kind of think about not doing it anymore, it's like, okay, you've done it. Do you need to? Why? I think I'm evolving in my life. And so there's like another story that's yet to be birthed. And through this, the work of this one and the evolution of this one, I'm coming closer to be able to tell the next one. And I do want to believe that there's an impact to telling this story. Like I said about going to storytelling events, like I recognize my humanity because of somebody else's story. And I do want to believe that because I've gone through what I've gone through, the lessons I have learned can help somebody else not feel alone. And I've gotten amazing feedback from that. When I have those doubts of like, oh, what's the point? Like, who do you think you are and why are you telling this story? You know, I've had some really lovely, lovely feedback. You know, someone told me specifically that because of my show, and she said, I just kept hearing the last line of your show, the last line, she made a different choice in her life to not return to an ex. She's like, my ex hadn't been in the picture for 2 years, and he shows up and doing his old game. And she's like, I just kept hearing the last line of your show. And she said, and I went, nope, I'm not going back to that. And so it was like, I'm standing there crying because I'm like, I don't know why I'm doing this. She's like, I'm going to tell you why you're doing this. This is why you're doing this right now. And then I think the other piece of this, Lynn, is, you know, asking again, like it's intense material. I'm finally at a place. I mean, I think people, because it's so visceral, people feel it. They all assume like this just happened. And so when they find out that the divorce was in 2010, so like all of this happened in 2009, and everything was official by 2010, and people are shocked. They're like, whoa. And I think I've needed that amount of time to be able to perform and tell this story without it destroying me. Back in 2015 was the first time I thought, I'm going to do a show. And there was a lot, I would have a lot of judgment about why I wasn't finally completing it, finally completing it, finally completing it. And I think I needed it. There was a turning point in the last couple of years where I finally was able to do the work and tell the story. And I had the confidence that it wasn't going to take me backwards, that it wasn't going to destroy me. Like I can live that full emotional hour, 10 minutes, and then I'm done with it. You know, I'm not going into these dark rabbit holes because it was tough. You know, it was a lot of years of healing working around all of everything that you witness on stage. Like that was a lot of work that I was doing because I was questioning everything. So any judgment that I had had, now that I look at it again, when you're looking back, you see things so much more clearly. I look back at my own judgment of like, well, you haven't done this story yet. You haven't finished it. You must not want to do it. And no, you weren't really ready. It wasn't the right time. Because as a human, as a person in the present, I wasn't truly past it enough that I could put myself back in the reality of what happened without that becoming reality again. You know, so it's like I can perform it, even though I lived it, and then set it aside almost as if it's a character. Where even probably in 2020, I probably wouldn't have been able to do that. I could have still performed it. But I probably would have then been living it every day too, if that makes sense. Versus like, here's this thing I perform, and now I'm like gonna go have a, you know, beer with my friends afterwards. So that being able to transition out of it, that took time for me, you know. And again, people are always like, oh, this happened how long ago? And like, you can still go in it. And I'm like, okay, well, let's also remember, I am a trained actor. Like that is my background. I have a theater degree, so like, it is a skill set that I actually know how to do. Always did using other people's words. So now you add the layer of it's my words. Again, I think that's why there had to be even more time between the events and the production, the performance, to allow me to be able to do the separation so that it felt like, oh no, I'm a character living this story rather than like I'm me living this story.
Yeah, interesting. Such an interesting weave. Okay, so, and you do memorize, you've memorized the whole thing?
You know, it's funny. I give myself a lot of permission to improvise. So I have a script. It is not word for word. Like, if you were to watch the show and have the script in front of you, you would see. And even that, I mean, that was another huge gift that Anne gave me at the end of one of those workshops. She said, now, Heather, when you're thinking about the show, do you want to have a script and like do the thing and have it memorized? Or would you rather have the structure of the scenes kind of know where you're going? And give yourself the permission to improvise. And it hit me like a punch. I went that one because it scares me. Because I'm an actor who's given a script and you memorize a script. So like that part was felt scary. But what I will also say is that I have a very specific training because of my work job, my work, my life. I am not scripted when I'm training. You know, I am given a script. There's usually an instructional designer that hands me a lesson plan. It's essentially a script, but they say make it your own. And then I think to be an effective teacher, you have to roll with what's happening in front of you. So even though I know here's the things, if it's 10 things I have to cover in this hour training, I can do that in any order. So I can go where I'm being guided and I can stop if I see someone's not with me and go, okay, you didn't quite get that. Okay, let me try it this way. Let's try this. Did you understand it this way? And then maybe someone answers something that takes me to a point in the lesson that would come later. I don't say, well, hold that thought. I go, okay, well, let's talk about that. And then I can circle back to the things I missed. So I've been doing that for years. And then prior to that, when I was doing the presentation, we were taught, at least when I started doing that job, how to build a presentation on the fly. Like, again, we would practice a structure, but you could change your structure based on who was in the audience. So, you know, I have 20 years of that. And while you wouldn't call that acting improvisational training, absolutely, I have lived in improvisation. I feel like I keep saying that word wrong, for years.
Wow.
So I did feel like with this, because again, the structure is me in the training classes, I'm scripted, but not in those classes. Like, it gave me permission. And it's funny, I remember talking to a friend of mine who's an actor. I went to acting school with her. She has 3 solo shows, very funny. And when I told her this, that I was going to kind of improvise, and even 2 months before the show, I didn't have the ending. And she was like, what do you mean? You don't have the ending and you're improvising? She's like, Heather, that's terrifying. And I think of her as a comic. She's done, you know, Groundlings. And so I was like, wait, what do you mean you're terrified? She's like, oh no, my script is word for word. She's like, I am memorized to the T. And her writing is very technical in that there's a lot of jokes. And, you know, she tells you a joke now, and then 10 minutes later, she returns back to that joke. So it's like it's music. It's a piece of music for her of kind of like hitting all the things. And I'm like, yeah, no, that's not what I want to do with this. I want to allow myself to react in the moment more for me and also feel free to keep exploring. So yeah. So again, that's kind of a long answer to your question about, but yes, there is a script. And for the most part, like, I'm on, it's rare that I would be like on page 10 and then jumping to page 20 and coming back. Cause it's like each one, there's scenes and there's a structure, but within each scene and within the structure of each scene, I do give myself permission to just be present and kind of riff if I need to.
Yeah, there was just a couple places where you sort of redirected your word. So it made me think that it's like a musician playing music. Like, you don't miss the beat, you keep the beat. So how do you feel about squeaky chairs?
Hilarious that you asked that question. That's funny. I said that thing to the one comment I gave to my videographer. I was like, oh my God, the sound is amazing. Except for when I sit down. Have you seen Singing in the Rain? Do you know Singing in the Rain?
Yeah.
There's a whole scene when they're moving into talkies and they put them on the mics. And so the sound isn't aligning with their words. And she's going, yes, yes, yes. But what you're seeing is no, no, no. And it's like the mic and the this. And so the minute I saw this recording, the minute I sat down in the chair, my brain went, oh my God, it's Singing in the Rain. Because it is. And it's hilarious. It's like the first thing you say, because he was like, yeah, I kind of cringed while we were recording. I mean, there's nothing he could do in the middle of the show. And he didn't tell me, and I didn't even think the mics were on the floor. So of course, you know, and that's the one piece. Like, I told him, I was like, everything is wonderful. The sound is wonderful. The look is wonderful. It's very clear. I said, but the chair, I was like, I had to giggle. And he was like, yeah, I don't think people will really notice. That's funny. That's like what the first thing you ask about the recording. I'm like, yeah, I think people will notice. It's not like you're live. If you were live, you might not notice that, but you're going to notice it on a recording. So yeah, it's the one challenge about doing a video of a live performance. And that was a choice. We could have mic'd me, but with his particular setup, I thought I was going to be restricted adding a lav mic and a mic pack. And I just thought, that's going to take me out of the live performance.
I don't think any chair would be totally quiet. I think that's just the nature of chairs, you know?
When I told him, I'd have to be completely still, and that's not human, and that's not me. You know, if the mics were in a different position, that would not be a problem. Yeah, or if a different like mic setup, like if there was some other choice, again, it's limited to whatever they can do. And it's one of the reasons it's tricky for me with giving people a video of a live performance. You know, this for me is, it's a theater piece. It's not a film. It's not a TV show. So I've had a lot of resistance. I did have the second show ever recorded. Like, I do have a recording from Hollywood Fringe. I just didn't share it with anybody because of that kind of sense of, oh, I don't know. I wanted it for myself. side note, I actually do have great sound from that one because a very kind human who also does videography, I didn't hire him, but he said, sound is everything, Heather. And so he offered to come in and record the sound separately from the people I hired. And he actually gave me a mic that didn't have a cord, like it just attached. So I actually do have some good sound. I just never put that whole, because the actual recording, it was a darker theater. The actual look is not that great. You don't see as much above me clearly. So it's like, okay, great. I have great sound for that one and not a great visual. So it is challenging to capture the essence of theater on film, you know, especially in small theaters, like without big budgets, you know, all of that. So yeah. Yeah. And it's unfortunate because all of the scenes in the chair, they're the quieter scenes, right? Like it's my mom. It's like me talking to my husband. Yeah.
Well, speaking of your husband, I'm glad you brought him up again. The one that a lot of this is based on, has he seen it?
Oh, no. I'm not in touch with him. I haven't been in touch with him in 10 plus years.
So what would he think of this of you using this material, like from like mining that experience? What would he think, do you think?
I don't care what he would think. You know, what's interesting about storytelling is that even if we've been in the story together, you're going to have a different version than I have. So my guess would be is he would not agree with this version. That would be if I had to guess. But yeah, even that, you know, being able to walk forward in this story, knowing that how anybody else receives it is not up to me. So even if he were to eventually see this, how he receives it, not up to me.
Well, you're making good use of a lot of recycling material. So would you recommend, as a writer and performer, would you recommend this as a way for people to process and move beyond and find humor and healing from a broken relationship?
Would I recommend doing the performance?
Writing for a start.
For sure. I mean, writing for sure. I think I've always used writing as a way to process even before this ever happened. You know, I've been a kid who always journaled diaries when I was a little kid, you know, with a little lock on it. And so it's always been a way to process and always been a way, I think, sometimes to clear out the cobwebs, to move through the voices in my head that get in the way, the judge, the perfectionist, all of the critical voices that come in. Writing has always helped me kind of move beyond that to what's actually true in this moment. So yeah, I think writing, when you're dealing with big questions, I think it is powerful. It is healing. It is a way to process. It is a way to find ahas and make meaning and discover so much. And I mean, I feel like the challenge for me with this, and maybe again, that's the writing process, is that it's certainly provided some answers and it's also led to more questions. And I don't mean about that relationship. I don't mean about that, but about my beliefs. You know, I think that is when I kind of talk about the next story. The bigger story at play now for me after all these years, it's no longer about him and that relationship. It's about everything else that fell apart. It's about the structure of my life. It's about the belief systems. It's about how I saw the world and what I believed to be truth. All of that came into question. It all fell apart. And the end of the relationship and the betrayal in the relationship was the beginning. And I do think because of how it all went down, it also wasn't about one relationship, because suddenly I felt like, well, there goes my present isn't real. So that means the future I thought I had is not real. And actually, I also have to look backwards and go, was the past real? So that's a huge existential crisis of like, is anything real? And so then layer on that, the questions of the belief systems, you know, how I was raised and religion and this Midwestern work ethic I have, it's like hard work pays off. Just having all of that come into question and have all of it feel like a betrayal. really feeling like, wow, everything I believed is wrong. So have I been lied to? Have I just been stupid that I've not questioned? And it's not that I didn't always search and seek and question, but that was the after effect of the one betrayal led to the question of everything else. And I think that's why it's taken me so many years to write about it, because that's the bigger story. You know, that's about identity, and that's about place in the world, and that's about deep-seated beliefs that I held on to until that time and then have been really hard for me to let go of. So it is, back to your original question, you know, I know it's helped me process, and I know it's helped me have those moments of like peace and clarity and seeing how even the falling apart of everything has actually led me to a more interesting place. You know, I struggle a lot with like, God, when am I going to feel settled? Can I just get something settled? Can I just get something figured out? And then I think, oh, you're never going to feel 100% settled, because you're always going to be asking questions. And through the writing, I think I ask those questions and I find new discoveries that both answer certain questions and then stir the next ones.
Nice way to put it. Okay, well, so then another question would be, if he's not likely to see it, what about a new relationship? Do you think this would turn, you know, sort of scare somebody off?
That's a great question. I haven't thought about that. I mean, I guess I'll have to let you know when that happens. I mean, I guess, you know, that is, yeah, who knows? Who knows what someone new might think about that, you know, and the witnessing of, because it is kind of back to the idea of the character. You know, it's easy to hide in a play someone else's words. It's easy, even if something like, you know, I'm a believer that actors, we tap into our emotions, even if we haven't lived those things, we're tapping into something that connects us. And there may be parts of us coming through in the character, but it's very easy to say, oh, that's just the writing. Like, that was great. Like, that's this. Their words. I'm just playing the character. I mean, there's no denying that this is my story. So yes, there's a lot of emotions and potentially scary things for someone who might be coming into my life. But I guess maybe that would be a test.
She's obviously going to do this in public. So
if they can't handle that, then they're not right for me.
So, just before I ask you about where you're going from here, if you know, is we were talking about writing, and, you know, before computers and even clunker typewriters, people wrote with pens and paper of various kinds. What do you think about that, about the traditional writing as opposed to people typing?
I would say up until this last year, I was always pen and paper, always, you know, it just was the way that I worked. You know, the connection for me was easier than the typing. I should tell you that, like, I do a lot of my work on my feet. I do a lot of improvisation to get to this. And again, that was a gift that Anne gave me of making it not about the words, you know, and as a performer first, not just a writer, I have found that for a long time with writing, I'd get really caught up in getting the words right. And, you know, you try your best on a free write, and especially Unmute is very good about that. Just follow the words, follow the words. You try your best. But then it comes down to editing, and potentially that can be a struggle, especially if you are a recovering perfectionist like I am. And so there was a moment working in a workshop with Anne where she didn't let me have words. You know, one of the improvs that came out of physical movement, typically she would move people into a monologue. So she'd give them a line. You've taken her full workshops, yes, where you've worked physically. Oh, okay. So maybe I should explain a little. She does a lot of like acting improvisation activities, exercises, and a lot of it turns into improv. But like, it'll start physically making some kind of physical motion. And then eventually she'll give whoever's in that motion a line, a couple words, and then eventually she'll get them to riff off it and do a monologue. And she had me do a whole exercise where she never let me use words. And I think I was the only one, like everybody else got words. And I did this whole monologue, like these just crazy sounds coming out of me. But I knew in the moment that I was so clear about the story I was telling, even though I wasn't using words, that I felt like everybody in the room understood me. And there was a whole journey. There was a beginning and a middle end to this story of Babel. And I felt it, and I felt the connection to the audience. And I remember sitting down after that work going, Heather, it's not about the words. It's not about getting the words right. It's about telling the story in your way. And for me, physical emotions, that's it. And that freed me up. I spent most of that workshop. Everybody would be, in our writing time, sitting down writing, and I'd be out in the yard talking to myself. So it's like I just learned, it's like, oh, you find the truth more if you let yourself be in your body and you riff that way versus riffing on the page. And then I got a gift. I think it was Joshua who mentioned Otter AI. It may have been during notes on your notes, but that changed everything too. Because I would voice record these monologues, these improvised monologues, but then I'd have to go back and type them. So it was like the world changed when he was like, just record them on Otter AI, because then it was easy to edit them. It didn't take an additional. I have hundreds of like voice memos of monologues that I have never transcribed. And now it's very easy. So in the end, that was the bulk of how the remainder of the show got written, was off of those riffs. So now it's a combination, right? It's a combination of paper, but usually it's up on my feet. And now up on the feet easily translates to the computer. And then allows me to edit there. So I think people have to find whatever works for them.
That's a really lovely dimensional answer to that question.
Learning for me that that is how I worked best and where I find, because there's so many of those improvised monologues where I found the moment that was the truth and I would know, or have even a surprise. I talk about the lamp, the one mom mother monologue. I talk about the broken lamp. That came out of an improvised moment where there was a lamp in the room. And I was like that lamp right there, and I riffed on, and there was this aha moment of that, actually reflected back on from somebody who was watching too, of like that deep belief that like people tell the truth and people admit when they've made a mistake, And then this woman in the audience, she goes, do you know, and again, workshop, it wasn't an audience, it was in the workshop. She's like, do you know that the whole time you were saying to us, people tell the truth. Like you admit if you break the lamp. She goes, do you know that your head was, you were saying the words, but you were shaking your head no the whole time? She's like, so you're talking about this truth that you believe, but your body was telling us that's actually not true. And that was the fight, right? The fight was, but I believed this. And my body's going, no, but not everybody does that. And so again, it's like for me to work physically, I have discovered the magic. And I'm not sure that everybody needs to do that because to the same extent, because not everybody wants to perform. But I do think putting yourself out into a creative practice that is maybe a little uncomfortable, but also gets you out of your head, you discover new truths. And I think, again, that's why Anna is so brilliant, because she makes people in workshop, even if you're just a writer, I'm using air quotes here because no one is just a writer, she makes people get up on their feet to try to uncover different pieces of the story, which for non-performers, I've watched it, like it's super uncomfortable for them. I ate it up like candy. When I was in her first workshop after years of not performing, it was like I was breathing again. So I was just like, yes, that's why I love working with her. But there were people in the room who were like, wait, I'm doing what? I'm getting up on my feet. I'm improvising a monologue. No, I won't do that. But most of the time, by the end of the week, they were realizing, oh, I discovered something. Wow, that really took me by surprise. Wow, there was a truth I hadn't uncovered. It came out of the physical versus out of just the mental. As a performer, thrilling. Like, I think it's thrilling, but scary for some people.
Oh, for sure. A mixture, for sure. I met Anne just towards the end of 2017 on Kauai, and I went to her first time combo event on New Year's Eve, and then she came to my little event that I put on 2 weeks later before I left to come back to Canada. And it was just as I was leaving, she said, "Oh, I'm doing this workshop and I have one spot left. Like, would you consider staying?" And there was no way that I could. That's how close I've come. Yeah.
Well, I would love to hear if you go do a live workshop and a full, body immersive experience, what that is like for you.
Yeah, you're reminding me. I just had this flashback of some kind of improv thing I did long, long time ago, and they recorded us so that we could see ourselves. Yeah, I'd forgotten all about that, but that reminded me when you said that about just the whole physicalness of it. Would you like to do a little riff improv on anything? as a little sample for us?
Oh, like a sample of what the show is, or a sample of something else? I am looking forward to something. It's funny. I might have to like refer to notes for this. There is a lot, the question of the bigger betrayals. And again, feeling like I had these belief systems were given to me and they have all proven to be false, at least to me. That's the next story, which is even scarier. Like it's a bigger, scarier story in some ways, and it's not resolved. So I think that's why it feels a little dangerous for me because of that, you know, because it's challenging bigger ideas. It's not just saying, look at this, how this relationship was false. It's like, look how the world is false. And I do think like a lot of the idea of just treating people well, you know, the religious beliefs, love thy neighbor, treat people like you want to be treated. How simple that seems to me as an idea, and yet how hard it is for people to actually live in that. The other layer of that is like when it comes to religion, having religion be something that's inclusive rather than divisive, you know, because unfortunately for me, that's kind of what I was raised with. And that's no one's fault. That didn't come from my parents. I think that just came from like what I was hearing in the church. So the idea of like actually questioning people who use religion as a way to judge rather than a way to love. So, like, that's a bigger conversation than just, oh, I was betrayed in my marriage, you know, this idea. But that same, it's like the riff that happens a little bit at the end of the show where I do kind of go off on men who cheat and is that acceptable? And like women are supposed to accept that. You know, it's like the extension of that is love one another, people. Love one another. That is what this is about. It's so simple. It's love. It should be so clear versus now I'm going to make it you versus me and us versus them. And we have to find the right answers. And it's black and white. And you're wrong. We're right. You're going to get kicked out. We're kept in. Like that's the whole battle. So I don't know if that's like a riff you want to use, but that's the battle that's in the bigger story. My own kind of confronting. Where I feel like there's logic and truth, and other people may not see it in the same way. It's like, well, whose logic is it and whose truth is it? And the truth that I was raised with has fallen apart. So I've already been through this one experience of like, wow, I'm going to question everything I thought was truth. Are other people doing that? Are other people questioning? Or are they locking, doubling down on the truth that they were taught because that feels safer to them?
Well, it's like the segment of your boxes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the bigger story. That whole, and I almost didn't use that in the piece because I thought that's not the same. It's like I consider that to be the prologue of the piece because it sets up the themes, but obviously it's different. And so I almost wasn't going to use it. And really, it was kind of talking to Anne that she was like, no, I think you can use that because I think I could not have it. But I actually like starting with that box piece. And that is the bigger story, truly. I'm breaking apart all of those belief systems that I think limit us and separate us. And I think right now, more than ever, like that's scary territory because there's a lot of doubling down going on about beliefs rather than going, well, let me hear your idea. Let me try to at least hear what your belief is. It's like, I don't want to hear that. You're wrong. I'm right. You're wrong. And I don't actually think that's what religion's supposed to be about. I think it's supposed to be about bringing us together. And so again, it's that one's a whole other. If that's the next story, like I can even feel myself getting anxious just talking about it out loud with you because I'm like, that is the next story for me. How I explore it, how I find the structure of that, like I don't remains to be seen. I don't know. As the artist too, of like I have this knowing, and then I have a lot of fear about releasing that baby into the world.
That's apparently a good sign, right? Okay, well, we didn't actually mention the name of your show and how that came about.
Title pending. Yeah, that's a funny story too, because I didn't realize that was going to cause so many challenges. The truth of that, how that came about, like I have the reasoning behind it, and then I have the thing that actually created it, that where it started. So when I decided to do the Hollywood Fringe Festival, There was a timeline to register for that festival and a deadline. And I was pushing up against the deadline, which, interesting enough, they extended the deadline for weeks. So, like, I should never have felt this stress, but I was like, I'm going to do this. And when I talked earlier about things aligning, like, I can look back now and go, oh, there was this beautiful alignment of things that happened very quickly that were almost like, if you don't follow that path, like, you're not paying attention. Like, the right dates aligned in a theater I liked aligned. And at that time, there weren't a lot of dates available at many spaces. And so anyway, the day I was seeing the theater spaces was also one of the first social events for the Hollywood Fringe Festival. They really do develop a nice community and they really want to support their artists. And that was another reason I wanted to be a part of that. My two goals when I decided to do Hollywood Fringe were A, do the show. Shut up about it already and do the show. And B, like, reconnect to a creative community, especially writers and performers, because I had been out of that world in LA for a very long time. So I am seeing the theaters. I'm pretty convinced I'm going to say yes to this one theater because of the dates. The closing date, my fifth show, because the sixth show ended up being an award show. Like, I got an Encore Award, and that's why I got to do the sixth show. But the fifth show was on my birthday.
Oh.
I was like, I can't imagine anything better as a birthday gift to myself than doing this show and closing the five show run on my birthday. So again, when that kind of opened up, I remember the theater producers telling me there was a reason why the dates he had left, nobody wanted the dates. And I was like, they actually work perfectly for me. So again, alignment. Anyway, that day when I met him, saw the theater, it was the second social event that the Fringe Festival community was having. Every week they'd have a happy hour 2 months leading up to the festival. So they start really small and they get bigger and bigger because people are networking and trying to, like, pitch their shows to each other. You get a lot of people coming to your shows because they're fringe artists. And so I showed up at the bar, having just kind of decided I was doing this, but I hadn't, like, signed the contract or paid the registration theater deposit, all that good stuff. And when I walked in, they gave us name tags and they said, please put your name and the title of your piece. And I was like, oh no, nobody told me I had to have a title just to be here. So I wrote, my name is Heather and my title's pending. And so, of course, as you're meeting people, they're like, hey, what's your title pending? And the more I talked about it, I was like, actually, that might work because at the end of the show, now I might be giving something away, but, like, it's not resolved. I don't run into the sunset. You know exactly what's going to happen next. I'm sort of not clear. And then the idea title, like, I was a miss, then I was a Mrs. And at the end of the show, I'm no longer a Mrs. So I'm a Ms. Like, what am I? And then my job, what's my job title going to be? And then, by the way, car titles. Your title is like declaring ownership of your vehicle. I'm trying to declare ownership of my life in this piece, So for me, it made sense. It was super layered. I was like, ooh, what I have learned, especially when it comes to, like, the wearing the other hats of having to produce and market this show, it has confused people, the title. People are always like, you need a catchy title. I'm like, what's clever? And I would either get, ooh, I love the title, tell me more, or more often than not, I would get, oh, well, get back to me when you have a title. And I'd have to go, no. That is the title. It's called Title Pending, So it is an interesting conversation. Again, that'd be like a whole other hour for us to talk about when it comes to, commerce and art. Because to get people to buy in to wanting to see the show without knowing anything about it, I'm not sure title pending gets enough attention. Again, it's either way. People going, oh, cool, I want to know more, or going, I don't get it. And then they don't remember. And, someone recently said, well, is there a tagline? Like, maybe you need, like, a second tagline to explain a little bit more. And there's validity in that.
I think it's important to include a mention that you are the writer and performer and producer.
That's exhausting because it's separate muscles. Different hats. Each one of those requires its own skill set. And the writing and the acting is very connected because of, especially with improvising and the rehearsal process. But the producing and the marketing side, like, that's a whole other, and not that I can't do both, I would just prefer to not do them all at the same time. Because it is hard. It's hard to switch gears. And especially, and the beauty of the Fringe was having multiple performances. What's been more challenging about these last two festivals where I just have one show is having to switch gears faster. You know, the day I did this show, we did the tech rehearsal for the show that afternoon. I hadn't been in that theater space before. All day, I was still dealing with people asking about tickets, and I should have just shut it all down. I should have just been like, I'm not responding to anything. Someone gave advice later that I should have taken. Like, the day of your show, you should have somebody who can monitor your phone, your socials, your email, so that you're not having to respond to those things. And I didn't, and I should have just do not disturb. I'm going to move into performer mode. But again, with that producer mode and that voice talking, it's like, well, you want a full audience. You want to sell out. You want to have people there. And you want to also, like, people want to support you. You want to be like, yes, please. You don't want to leave them hanging, but it's also, there's lessons learned of like, okay, at some point you do have to let that piece go because each one of those things requires such a different focus. In some ways, I sort of cheated myself as the artist that I didn't give myself that full day to just be the artist. And it's the challenge for anybody who's doing this, a solo show. That is a big thing because no matter what, it's just you on stage. So you are navigating a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. And how many people, like what kind of range of numbers in the audiences for these eight performances?
Each festival has gotten bigger, which has been its own amount of stress too, as the producer side. The first theater space was 36. The next one was 65, 66. This one was 84. So each time the theater space has gotten bigger. And that's been, again, a whole other journey for me, watching my own expectations of the producer side. Because with the Hollywood Fringe, again, I said my goals when I started were do the show, meet people, be in community. Technically, my first show was a preview. By the time I did that night, I was like, oh, check, check. I did those goals. Like, I'm already part of this community because I've been going to these social events for 2 months prior. I did the show. It was that weekend post-show that the producer kind of kicked in because I felt very proud of the piece. And it was seeing other people's work that weekend and seeing people getting audiences that voice popped in of like, oh, well, if you were just the producer of this show of Title Pending, you would be doing everything you could to get people to come see this. Like, if it were your show and I was producing your show, I'd be hustling to market it, to sell tickets. And then, frankly, a little bit of competitor came out that weekend when I went to see other shows, some of which were sold out. And I went, oh, my show is as good as that, which is really hard for me to say out loud. Like, that sounds like my ego talking. So it is really hard for me to admit that. But it went into that mode of like, no, look at this as a theater piece. Try to be objective. Is it a good evening at the theater? Do people feel something? Does it challenge them? Is it, has there been a lot of time and intention put into this story? Yes. So, okay, as an objective piece of theater, what do you want to do about that? And it really, I kicked in. I was going to take time off for a couple of days and not even think about it because I had till the next weekend to do the show. And I was up at 4 a.m. I'm emailing people and I'm doing photos and PR stuff because my brain went, no, it is a good piece of theater and you deserve an audience. This artist, if I separate myself from that artist being one and the same, this artist deserves an audience. And so that was my next goal. I set a goal. I want to sell out at least a show. And then the second was, and I would like to win an award. And then boom, boom, both of those things, how I sold out the next four shows, I won the award. And so it's like that drive is in me. But again, having to bounce back and forth between the two, I think you haven't really asked, but you did start to ask, like, what's next? I think that's what's next, Lynn. I need to hire somebody to come take some of that work. If I want to keep doing this, I've proven to myself I can do it by myself. Don't need to do it that way again and again and again. Like, it could be a little.
Well, there is a word they invented for that. It's called delegation.
What is that word? I'm not sure I know that word. But yeah, I've always been a little bit of that overachiever and recovering perfectionist and like, I can do it. I can do it myself. So that is something that I am trying to learn to let go of. And when I think about what's next, I'm like, okay, if you want to keep doing this show, maybe that's where some focus needs to go. The intention is I want to do the show. The intention is I want to also build a team and keep collaborating and be part of community. And I spent a lot of time this last year investing in myself and in the show. It's like, okay, so that's maybe the natural extension is now you invest in bringing someone else who wants to be a part of helping the story grow. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what that means. But I also know how tired I am after, even though these have been spaced out, these performances, these last two, it's been months in between. After this last one, I was real tired. I still am. It's been over a month. And I'm like, oh man, that took a lot out of me this time because I was also back at work. You know, I gave myself the gift of a lot less work as far as my day job for months so I could really focus in on being an artist. And this was the first time that I was like back at work full time and doing this. And that's when I went, oh, I'm not sure I have the stamina to maintain that. So I could get a little help.
It's great that, yeah, you're open to that and step by step, right?
Right, step by step.
Yeah, by the way, you mentioned the salon that Joshua and Adam do. And yeah, that was right around this time of year last year. And I actually did one of the stories. Yeah, that was really fun.
Yeah. And so maybe it was you who announced it in Unmute. And that's why I saw it and I clicked on it and I said, oh, I'm going to make sure I come to that so I can see.
Was it me that you
I
came
think
in on
so.
that?
I'm guessing that is why I ended up at that salon. I really do think you shared it.
I
I
think
clicked
you're right.
on it and then said, I need to go see and listen. And again, so many years of hearing about both of them, great opportunity to just, be in the room and see how they do things. And I love, with the connection to Ann Randolph too. It's like there's a shared language, which made it very easy to jump into that class. It was very, I worked with Joshua directly during that class, and it was very right away. It was like very easy to communicate with him because of this shared language.
Yeah, right on. Well, that's great. Well, my goodness, Heather Tyson, I was really looking forward to this, and now I'm really, really happy that we've had this time to have our voices and ideas and inspiration together. Thank you so much.
Well, it is my pleasure. And thank you for the great questions, Lynn. Things I wouldn't have necessarily even considered, and helpful to be asked some of these things to reflect both on, the whole process, how far I've come, and again, to continue to question what's next. It's all pending.
All pending boxes and beyond. Yes. And heathertyson.com, is that workable?
That is workable.
All right.
Maybe what I'll do, Lynn, is at least get you the boxes piece, something
Yeah, that would be great. I have a little something to share.
with your listeners.
A bit of the out there on the stage. Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, I will see what I can do and make that happen.
This has been great.
Yes, likewise. Thank you for having me. Been a pleasure. Thanks so much, Lynn.